Well, it's getting to be that time of year again. Start thinking about the addition, the screen porch, maybe the deck. Maybe it's time for some new windows. Maybe it's time for that kitchen or bathroom that you've always been looking for. A lot of remodelers in the Madison and Dane County area, and a lot of them charge too much. There's also a lot of people that come knocking on your door and want to do the job, and they'll throw you any price. Be very, very careful. You want a remodeler that has a great reputation, who uses good materials, and has a trustworthy staff. I got the perfect person for you. Scott from S&R Remodeling. He's got professional estimators. He's got a great staff who treat your house with kid gloves. And he's been at this for almost 30 years with an A rating with the Better Business Bureau. There are more expensive. There are cheaper. He's just right. And he'll give you more references than anyone else. You will get pages and pages and pages of references for whatever project you're doing. Talk to S&R Remodeling, 222-8044. That's 222-8044, srremodeling.com or S&R Remodeling on Facebook.
And welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us now, Madison Mayor Paul Soglin. Mayor, I hope you're doing well.
We are. We are so far, what is it? We are now almost 6-8 weeks into the Trump presidency, and we're still here.
I happened to run into Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett the other day at Ed Garvey's funeral, and he told me he's very concerned about what Donald Trump may be doing to public housing, that it could affect Milwaukee in a number of areas. He's very concerned about that. Are you concerned about that?
Very much so. Housing is one of the main areas of concern, and not just housing, everything that HUD does, because that includes our community development block grant programs, a multitude of housing programs, and, look who the hell is running HUD these days.
Well, that's a bit disconcerting, but if you look at Donald Trump's first actions as an adult and what he was involved with in New York, that isn't particularly edifying when it comes to rules that we have so people aren't discriminated against.
Well, there's a question of discrimination. There's the question of how reasonable are we going to be in regards to making housing accessible, making it fair. And it's not just housing in the cities, it's also the need for housing in smaller communities in Wisconsin as well.
Explain how the federal government affects a city and what you have to do and what a change in administration can do. Because I remember you have never been afraid to point out your differences with presidents of all parties. If my memory serves me well, you weren't afraid to be critical of the Carter administration back in the late 70s.
That is true. But, in terms of housing, we've got a whole array of housing programs in this country for people who have significant problems in terms of income, well below the poverty level. These are households with maybe $10,000, $12,000 a year annual income. Even at $25,000, it's a stretch. But then there's folks, you take a family of four living on $35,000, $40,000, and while they can make some contribution towards the cost of rent, they can't do 100%, not if it's going to be safe, adequate housing. And I'm not going to run through all the programs that are out there, but the point is it needs collaboration and it needs a federal presence. Let me just mention veterans, for example, and what we were able to accomplish in the last 2 years of the Obama presidency. We did a headcount here in Madison as part of a national effort to get all veterans housed. And we had estimates of 150, 160 homeless vets in the city of Madison. They were not necessarily Madisonians, but they are veterans who had come here as well. The housing folks, advocates for the homeless put the number at a lower number, which surprised me, at 130. Well, at the end of 2016, we had housed 193 veterans. 193. We had 50 more to go. 25 of them had housing vouchers from the federal government, which we were enacting in collaboration with the Veterans Administration. So by now, of those 25, my guess is most of them have been housed or they're close to it, which leaves us 25 more. So we housed 193. We got another 25 that are well underway. It leaves us 25 more to house between now and the end of the year, which is certainly an achievable goal. So my first concern, will the administration support us? And secondly, we now want to move on to families. Yep, that's our next goal, all families.
So when you see him talking about expanding the federal government in ways such as building a wall or doing a big increase in tax breaks for the wealthy and big increases in military spending, you know that money's going to come from somewhere.
Well, it's not only going to come from these housing programs, but it's also, for example, going to come from health programs like Medicaid, Medicare. And when that happens, the demand in terms of more families becoming homeless will only increase as they try and basically stay alive to take care of their health needs.
Are you concerned about some of his saber rattling on immigrants and the cooperation with that the police department has with immigrant communities and that affecting the city adversely?
Yes, that's the short answer. Yes, we are, very much so.
I interviewed the police chief on this, and it sounds to me like no matter what Donald Trump does, they're going to keep the same relationship that they have, that the city of Madison police are not going to be ICE agents.
We're not going to become ICE agents. We're not going to be agents for the federal government. We have enough to do on our own agenda, and if he wants the federal government to take care of federal problems, well, he's going to have to find a way of paying for it. But let me add one more thing to this discussion. Up until now, most of the discussion here in Wisconsin has focused on Madison, Milwaukee, the urban areas, and what's happening here. There is a significant population in rural Wisconsin in terms of the farming, the agriculture, the dairy industry. And there are a significant number of immigrants who are essential to Wisconsin's agricultural industry, particularly the dairy industry. And, of course, it becomes very important during the harvest, as well as planting.
Well, and that, of course, is what killed some of these right-wingers in the Wisconsin legislature, had a anti-sanctuary city bill last year. It was dairy farmers speaking up and calling talk radio in northeast Wisconsin that really killed that. And we had actually large cooperation with a day without Latinos from some sources you wouldn't have expected it. Let's put it that way.
Well, and what's critical here is that we understand that. And while there may be some differences in the future, challenges regarding, for example, challenges regarding wages, working conditions, right now we have a natural alliance with the dairy industry, with Wisconsin farmers, in regards to this challenge that's being imposed on us by Donald Trump. And I might mention Congressman Sensenbrenner.
Explain how you were able to work out it was a messy process, but Alder Shiva Bedar-Saloff introduced a safe space resolution. You did not think that was a good idea. Explain how that all got weeded through.
Well, what I wanted to do was keep us on a line, on one side of a line where we did not unnecessarily come into a legal confrontation with the federal government. In other words, I feel we are on solid ground in terms of saying, no, we are not going to perform illegal acts on your behalf, federal government. No, we are not going to detain people who are not charged with a serious crime. No, we are not going to accompany you on raids. The line that she put into the resolution about the city council offices being a safe space was deliberately very vague, but my problem with it was that vagueness conveyed a sense of comfort, that people who were fearful of being picked up might think they could go to the council offices and legally be safe. And the point is, they wouldn't be.
So it gave people a false sense of security.
Yes. And at the same time, because of the vagueness of the wording, it might also then have given the Walker administration the legal tool they needed to withhold our funds. And the last thing I wanted was to, one, jeopardize city funding, but at the same time, do it for show, not for substance. I mean, why put that kind of risk out there unnecessarily?
Madison Mayor Paul Soglin with us at sliceoffice.com. Speaking of the state, you've been critical of the governor's budget. You're critical about something that they're proposing cutting with the proposal to eliminate farm to school. Explain what that is.
The farm to school program is it's part of a national trend. It's the effort to get fresh produce, fresh food to our school children. And the concept is you know, so simple, so beautiful, which is, one, it's obviously good for farmers, and two, it is not only immediately good for school children in terms of the nutritious value of the commodities, of the produce, but it sets them on a lifelong course of staying away from junk food and coming to appreciate fresh foods, fresh fruits and vegetables in particular. So there's this position that costs about $85,000 a year. There's a council that works with that position, which I imagine administratively might cost $10,000-$15,000 a year. It helps in terms of millions of dollars of food moving from farm to schools, but it also has got grants in the area of health, in the area of nutrition, that's well up into six figures, far more than the actual cost of the program. And to me, it just was one of the dumbest budget. I mean, I called it fake budgeting.
Are you aware that in the governor's budget as well, right now on the school spending cap for local districts, schools get an exemption if they spend money on rehabbing buildings and making them more energy efficient. Are you aware that he went after that? Is proposing going after that as well?
He's proposed going after that. I mean, and then there's something which he's silent about, and that is the threat to tax-free bonds. The bonds we issue to build schools, to build roads, to build fire stations, it's made possible because the people who buy those bonds, and 85% of them have incomes of $250,000 or less, it significantly cuts down on our costs. Costs for the city, costs for the school district, costs for the state. And there is a right-wing movement in Congress right now to limit those tax-free municipal bonds, and he's absolutely silent on it.
Won't say a word.
Not a word.
What do you think about him threatening our school district with the formulation for compensation for teachers?
Well, first word that comes to mind here is hypocrisy. I mean, this is a guy who rode into office claiming that he was for local government, he was for states and the federal government imposing their own rules. You know, we're the ones who know how to run our school districts. We're the ones who know how to run our cities. We've already seen what he's done Lone Rock, they're closing schools. It's happening all over the state because of his policies. Reminds me of the guy who burns your house down and then comes back the next week and offers to help you pitch a tent to replace it.
This is going to sound like a silly question, but during your most recent terms as mayor, we've seen a renaissance in the city, and I'm not saying it's all because of you, but obviously something's going right. Where we see cranes everywhere, we see incredible, not sprawl, but the sort of positive growth infill.
Yes.
Has the governor ever called you up to that august building and said, what are some of the things that we could be doing outstate that you guys are doing in Madison that would make us more successful? And I know that sounds like a silly question, but wouldn't that make sense?
All right. So, Sly, the Madison metropolitan area is 9% of the population of the state of Wisconsin. Going back to when he came into office, we've created 56% of the new jobs in the state of Wisconsin. 56%. We're 9% of the population.
So not those wealthy, not those wealthy suburbs around Milwaukee County.
All right. So to make the point, this has been during an era, a period of time, when he has been cutting back on state and government employment. So we operate with a very different philosophy, a very different attitude than he has in terms of destroying the state's economy. So, I mean, we've sent emissaries, we've sent messengers over there. I know he has had a presentation on all of the Madison and Dane County data with the statement being made to him, this could be the entire state of Wisconsin. It's, you know, ideologically, I was at a point when I was in my 20s where I was concluding that any time a capitalist made a profit, the rest of us were getting screwed. Well, I opened up my mind and I came to realize that that was not always true. That there were times where we could all benefit, and that was the important thing with public participation, was that it not just be the developer, it not just be the corporate owner that makes a profit, but that we all benefit. And if that happened, you grow the economy. So I made some adjustments in my political ideology. I did that in my 20s. Now, I don't know how old this governor is, but he is locked into political ideology. He's absolutely determined to have that ideology drive his economic policies and absolutely refuses to acknowledge that the concept of cutting taxes for the wealthy that will end up creating more jobs and more investment is absolutely false. I mean, Kansas is being driven into debt, into desperation at a rate similar to Wisconsin. And at least there, the Kansas legislature is trying to change the course. Here in Wisconsin, the facts be damned as far as Scott Walker's concerned.
By the way, he's going to be 50 this year, just so you know.
Well, he should have learned this lesson at least 3 months ago.
He really is very, very, he has an affable personality on the outside, but inside he's very, very dogmatic. The ideology is very rigid.
No, he is driven by these ideological views. They're basically canned for him, and they are formulated for him by a variety of groups like the Cato Institute, like Franklin Institute.
Heritage Foundation?
The Heritage Foundation. It's funded for him in terms of spreading these falsehoods by his buddies, the Koch brothers. And we're all trapped in this nightmare. As long as he's going to continue to be in office.
Madison Mayor Paul Soglin with us at sliceoffice.com. I want to ask you before we go today a little bit about the settlement with the insurance company and the Tony Robinson's family.
Yeah.
Is there any political statement in that other than the insurance company made a decision that it was too risky for it to go to trial?
They made a financial decision weighing risk and the payout, and that's how the conclusion was made by them. We had nothing to do with it. What I think is critical here is what to me is the most troubling part is that it does not give us any answers as to when you've got someone acting violently who may have mental illness problems, may be under the influence of drugs or alcohol. It doesn't give us guidance as to what a police officer is supposed to do. And to me, that's the really sad, critical element that we might have gotten resolution with a trial.
Do you think the city's healed at all, or are we just another shooting away from having this happen all over again?
Well, I think there is a certain degree of healing and wanting to move on. But what's really critical here is we're still going to be in a never land in terms of the law in getting it. Determination as to how much risk the officer has to undergo themselves or allow the rest of the public in terms of their dealing with somebody who is impaired and is acting violently.
One more thing. I lied. One more question. The ordinance regarding panhandling at street intersections.
Right.
This was not an easy lift for you to get this through, to say the least.
Took a year and a half.
What will happen now?
Well, we're going through a process right now of developing the educational program, both for the public and also for those people who are in the media, and regardless of what they're doing, panhandling or not. And and then in another couple of weeks, we'll start telling people they have to stop.
Are these people homeless?
Well, I'll tell you this much. I can't remember if it was 53 or 56, but whichever number it was, one of them was a homeless veteran. I can tell you that much. One of them was a homeless veteran. I know that a lot more than one was carrying signs saying homeless vet.
It's a remarkable city. By the way, I learned the hard way this morning when I went to work that you should probably lock your car at night. For some reason, I forgot to lock my car last night. And my car was ransacked this morning. Now, you know, there was nothing of value in there, but it's my understanding, the police tell me people are going through cars trying to grasp every little bit of change that they can. They don't steal stereos anymore. They ransack cars for money or cell phones.
Uh-huh. Well.
Yeah. You'd think I'd know that by 55.
Of all people, I know. You should know. Especially since you've got such a fancy, expensive automobile that's going to attract attention.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say that, but I do have a fleet of vehicles. All right, stand by for just a moment, Mayor. Madison Mayor Paul Soglin with us at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day in mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, and squad cars, ambulances, and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.